Lecture 6, The Church and Sacraments.
Religion, including Christianity, is not just belief. It's about practice. It's not just what people think or profess. It has to do with what people do and what people do together. In the next several lectures, we will be considering Christian practice. As I mentioned in the last presentation, many Christians think of their religion in terms of belief and tend to look at other religions in terms of their belief. But in fact, practice is extremely important in Christianity. In this class, we'll talk about the church and the sacraments and worship. In the next class, we'll talk about morality. And then we'll talk about the radical edge in Christianity in terms of practice. Now, the most dramatic and unexpected development in Christianity happened by accident, though at the time it appeared to be divine providence. That is, the decision by Constantine in the year 313 not only to tolerate Christianity, which formerly had been persecuted, but even to make it the established religion of the empire. Later, I will consider the political implications of this dramatic decision. But now I want to look at the profound effect this change had on Christian practice, especially the organization of the church and its worship. Now, the conflict with Gnosticism in the second century, we saw, had already defined Christianity as an embodied and institutional religion. In contrast to Gnosticism's preference for the purely spiritual, Christianity said, no, bodies are important. And in contrast to Gnosticism's preference for the individual, Christianity said, no, we need a visible organization. We need a structure. We are a people, a community. But the establishment of Christianity as the imperial religion had a profound effect on its public presence. Its status shifted from that of a persecuted minority, the Age of the Martyrs, remember, to a state-sponsored majority. Obviously, fervor was no longer a requirement for membership. Christianity was in a privileged position, and membership had its rewards. So Christianity changed overnight and virtually with no preparation from a group that met quietly and perhaps even clandestinely in private households and even in the catacombs, burial places in various cities, to an organization that was visible, public, and was given by Constantine great public buildings, the basilicas, which were originally court halls of justice, to use for their worship, and were given a hand in the various public charities, running orphanages, running hospitals, running the welfare system of the city and the state. This had a tremendous impact on how Christianity began to emerge. Although, under Constantine, the local congregation, the ecclesia as local congregation, still was an important and elaborate superstructure of administration for the church began increasingly to match, even mimic, the bureaucracy of the empire. Let's look first, then, at these forms of organization. Although from its earliest days, Christianity had a formal structure that was largely drawn from Greco-Roman clubs and schools on one side and the Jewish synagogue on the other side, namely, a simple structure of a board of administrators, called a gerousia or presbyterion, a board of elders, with a revolving office called the superintendent, the episcopos, the bishop, and some subordinate roles of people basically called helpers, men and women who were diakonoi and did the practical chores. The growth of Christianity numerically, and above all, its public posture now under Constantine, began to develop a more elaborate form of what is called hierarchy. Now, the term hierarchy, of course, means holy power. and a regimented form of power by which holiness is mediated from the top to the bottom. So even before Constantine, we begin to see the emergence of some sign of this, moving from the simple structure reflected in the Pauline letters to people like Ignatius of and Polycarp, whom we mentioned in an earlier presentation, who thought of a single episkopos as a sort of monarch within each community, who were over the board of elders and the deacons. And increasingly, this arrangement was legitimated by theological language. It was legitimated in terms of using the language of priesthood, borrowed from the Jewish cult, and the language of sacrifice, so that